True or false? First person, Russ. Trump has said seven times since January that he wants to take Canada over as the 51st state. Seven times. What do you think?
I think probably
True or
false, because
false?
I think he's probably said it a lot more than that.
Think false. Madge?
Yeah, I'll go false. Yeah.
Graham?
I think he said it at least 97 times.
So you've all gone false.
Yeah.
Incorrect. He's only said it seven times. It feels like a lot more, but
really?
It's not.
What
about
like been
hasn't he
for a year.
said it in private calls with Justin Trudeau?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, they're private. I'm talking about in public. He probably has said it in private.
Wow.
But only seven times in total.
Can you imagine how mad the things he says in private?
It begs all sorts of questions, doesn't it?
What a
the
time
fact
to be
he's
alive.
said that. I mean, and then we've offered him a state visit, and the King is the head of state of Canada. Just mind-bogglingly. Anyway,
Oh,
next.
he was given the letter and he couldn't read it. Because he
Yeah.
can't read.
Do you think that was it?
No, he doesn't like wearing glasses. He needs glasses to read, clearly, and he doesn't like wearing them. Which is
Yeah.
why what Zelensky needs to do is just give him a piece of paper that says, I surrender on behalf of Russia, and just get him to sign it. Be like when the Friday night armistice got OJ Simpson to sign something saying I did it.
Or OJ Simpson. Oh, yeah.
That was a great episode.
Very good. Madge.
Yep.
Rupert Lowe has announced this week that he plans a new party with Jacob Rees-Mogg and Ben
What?
Habib. True or false?
True.
Okay. Graham?
I hope so. Split that Tory vote. Split it real good.
So you think true as well?
Yeah.
And Russ?
No, I think false.
You don't think he could work with Mogg? Or Mogg wouldn't work with another party?
I think Mogg is too much of an absolute dyed-in-the-wool traditionalist. I am a conservative to ever consider being anything else.
Interesting.
Conservative till I die. It is
Yeah.
false. He has mentioned Ben Habib, but he has not mentioned Jacob Rees-Mogg. Russ, you're in the lead. 1 point. Come on,
But
co-hosts.
so over.
Graham, true or false? One in five UK children live in poverty.
True.
I think it's true. Madge?
Yeah.
True.
Russ, sorry, Russ.
I think it's a bit more than one in five.
You
But
think
yeah,
more?
I think it's a little bit above one in five. Yeah.
So
Oh
that would be a
shit.
false.
Oh, do I cheat? And then we can cheat, and then at least if one of us gets a point, it evens out a little bit. God, then I'll cheat. I'll say false.
It is true. One
Yes.
in five.
So, Graham, it's all up to you now. You can win this.
You can win this.
Unbelievable.
It's 1-1, isn't it?
2025, I'm one of the richest countries in the world.
And one in
Yeah.
five live in
That
poverty.
number's going to go up as well, so.
Anyone see the Gary Stevenson versus Daniel, can't think of what his surname is, and Diary of CEO came out today?
No, missed that.
Just didn't want to believe that inequality was the biggest issue affecting the UK.
Really?
Yeah, he thought it was taxes.
One in five
Well, yeah, of course he
pensioners
would
are
think
living in
that.
poverty as well, and one in five pensioners are millionaires. So that just tells you, like, that there's money out there. In fact, the boomer generation holds 90% of the wealth of the UK held in one cohort.
90%.
90%, because they've got all the property, and a lot of them bought another house that they don't need, so that someone else has to work in it. No, sorry, not work in the house, but they have to work there and then pay the rent, and
They
they
live off
suck up
that.
all the money and pay off the second mortgage with it, third mortgage, fourth mortgage, fifth mortgage.
Russ, final one for the game. Young carers.
Is this meant to cheer me up?
Young carers save the UK economy 10 billion a year.
Young carers.
Young carers, people that care for their grandparents or parents.
10 billion a year.
10 billion a year in savings for the tax.
Yeah.
Oh no! What happened?
It's a DNF. That's a DNF, so it's not a loss for us. It's a DNF.
Oh
It's a
no.
DNF. It's a DNF. It's a DNF. He lagged out.
Welcome everyone to the Sunday Roast. We have lost our guest, but we do have two co-hosts. Graham, can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Graham Hughes. I'm from Liverpool, England, and I'm the first person to visit every country in the world without flying. Whoop, whoop.
Madge, can you please introduce yourself?
I'm Madge. I run the Big Madge Studios YouTube channel, and we've got Alex because we have no guest.
No guests, we just got hosts. That's all we need this week. Because there's plenty to talk about. Benefit reform. Some are calling it austerity 2.0. Madge, what are your thoughts this week?
So there's a lot to go over. So language is important. So you talk about reform, which is obviously not, it's kind of a nice way of putting cuts. So there's your first thing there. The other thing to really think about is the fact that, you know, when they put out stuff like this, they always talk about more opportunities for people to work, just like they're talking about for younger people. So even if you're a person who's disabled, if you're under the age of 22, you're most likely going to have your benefits cut or be ineligible for them. So people with lifelong illnesses will suffer through that. We saw that with Torsten Bell talking about how if you're unemployed when you're young, it affects your prospects later on. But if you've got an illness, that means you can't work. Or you've got an illness that requires a lot of help, you're not going to get it. So language be the first thing that you always have to look at when you discuss these kind of things, especially with cuts. But it's a complete disaster, you know, the way they reformed PIP, a Tory policy that I think it was George Osborne that implemented. And even George Osborne, Mr. Austerity himself, said he would not do this because PIP is not an in-work benefit, I mean, an out-of-work benefit. You can get it if you're in work as well. So what they've done is conflated many different things together, and they keep talking about how they don't talk about the other party of workers anymore, you know, people in work. They talk about they are the party of work. This is Tory language. We saw that, you know, and I think that Torsten Bell interview is very telling when Victoria Derbyshire really, really honestly, it was brutal, said to him, could you live off £73 a week? And he goes, no, I have a mortgage.
70.
70. Sorry, £70 a week. And he said, I can't, I've got a mortgage.
They have significant disabilities, they will still be able to apply for personal independence payment, but we are not going to write off 21-year-olds.
For those who can't, they'll be living on about
We are not
70 quid.
Going to write off 21-year-olds as
For
unable
those
to
who
work.
can't, they'll be living on about £70 a week. Could you live on 70 quid a week?
Absolutely not.
So why do you expect young people to?
We won't. We provide housing benefit as well, and we'll provide personal independence payments.
This is cash in
for
their
those
pocket.
that
This
need it.
70
So are
quid
the things
cash
I
a
just
week.
mentioned to you. So are the things I just mentioned to you. That's how the benefit system works. If people need help with their rent, they receive that as well. If they need support with a
So
disability, personal independence
to
payments
buy
is there for
food
that as
to
well.
pay bills,
Yes.
70 quid a week. You've just told me you couldn't live on that.
Well, no, I have a mortgage to pay because of the current situation. But what I'm saying to you, and the benefit system exists to provide housing benefit support for young people as well. But what I'm saying to you is the current system is a disaster for those young people. And, you know, it's all well and good to say you don't like every aspect of these changes, but what you are defending is a Tory system. You're not,
I'm
no,
not
but people
defending
are.
anything.
No,
I'm
but I
asking
sat
you
in the chamber.
questions about your
Absolutely, and
plans.
that's your job. But I sat in the chamber today and heard people say, I'm worried about this aspect of the change. But there's not enough focus on the disaster that is happening in our country today. We are seeing much faster growth in claims for disability benefits than we
Yes,
are seeing
you've said
actual
that.
levels of disability,
Can I
particularly for
just
young people.
And then he's like, we've got a range of like housing benefits and stuff like that available. But it's like, if you want to look more like a Tory, just say shit like that. Because honestly, I don't think Ian Duncan Smith was that callous, I'll be honest. And he's another guy, he helped design the system. So when the guys who designed the system said, look, guys, I wouldn't do this, that's awful. So, you know, you talk about a party that's attacked the most vulnerable. I was on record probably over a year ago talking about how bad the fiscal rules are, how they're economically illiterate, and also how damaging they're going to be. And it seems like she has stuck very much to that rule. And instead of looking at tax increases on the rich, they're going to take the money from the poor, which is, again, a Tory move. We saw that under David Cameron.
I'd probably push back a little bit on suggesting it's a Labour move, just because I'm very much aware of a very traditionalist viewpoint that you should do everything in your power to avoid being on benefits. And I've felt that from both the Labour Party and from the Tory Party.
We published the Welfare Reform Green Paper
to help people get the skills for jobs.
This problem goes very deep, and dealing with it will be very tough.
To help those who've been ignored by government for too long.
Supporting people to get off welfare.
So that the default becomes what work you can do, not what you can't.
Like, you might conflate the two and say they're the same, but I've always felt that that's, for whatever reason, that's always just been in the background within traditional Labour viewpoint,
I
which
think
I
with
find
these.
interesting. I'm not, it's not a criticism, it's just, it's not an endorsement, it's just an observation, which I find interesting.
I think one of the things with this is important to look at is like this version of the Labour Party. Like when they talk about Blairism, this is Starmerism. It's like, you know, the differences in communism, you have Mao, Khrushchev, and Stalin, and Lenin, these are different people, even though like some of them claim to have the same ideology. And, you know, I saw Ava Santino of Politics Joe talking about how.
There's an argument there, though, that Rachel Reeves's economic policy has gone to the right of Thatcher, because Thatcher might have closed the mines, but she did at least let people go on the dole. Whereas Rachel.
Stalin would be like, no, you're straight back in work, lads. You ain't claiming nothing. And I was like, that's a pretty nasty take to have. But at the same time, you know, I don't think it's that inaccurate. I wasn't around when Thatcher did all of that, but
Blair and Brown were supporting of these policy, this type of get people back into work, get them off welfare. That has been
There
around.
is There is a way of not penalizing people who are out of work, which is what this party are doing. Because you've got two different things going on here. One is attacking people who are out of work, and one is attacking people who are unable to go to work. You know, people who are ill, people who have mental or physical illnesses, right? And this is, you know, we've seen this policy in the UK with workhouses. You're a history guy, you know about this stuff.
Yeah.
They talked about this is what I'm talking about, the deserving poor versus the undeserving poor, that kind of stuff. You know, George Osborne talked about shirkers versus strivers, that divisive language. So you conflate something like PIP, which is something that someone in work can get, and you talk about cuts to it and changes, and you conflate that with things like universal credit, even though they're two different things, because they're trying to confuse the public, because the public doesn't understand this stuff. Torsten Bell, the MP, doesn't understand this stuff. No. How the public meant to understand it. Is the media going to explain to them? You've got Laura Koonsberg teeing it up for, what's his name? That idiot, Wes Streeting, talking about how, oh yeah, mental health referrals and things have gone up. It's like, we had a pandemic, Gene. Like, people have been stuck at home. Like, they haven't gotten any help. So, you know, this is the continuation of small C conservatism. That's what we are seeing here.
Mm.
In terms of, if you look at what David Cameron said and you look at what this lot are saying, it's not that different. You know, they talk about compassion. We need to get people back into work. The economy's tanked, all of this stuff, right? No one on unemployment tanked the economy. I don't remember that happening. No one who's taking PIP stopped that. And if you're mad that more people are claiming PIP, maybe look at the reasons why they're ill. Maybe look at the reasons why they can't do, you know, basic jobs.
Pandemic, NHS,
is it because, yeah, you've got long COVID, you've got people who can't get routine operations. I get they're trying to clear the NHS backlog, but you have to do that before you start, especially before you start going after people on these benefits. You have to make it so they can actually go back to work. They're physically able to or mentally able to. You know, there were lots of stories during the pandemic of people who had long COVID who, you know, said, oh, I want to go back to work, but I can't. I need a hip operation or my lungs are knackered. You know, these people need help and they will go back into work. You've had medical professionals like nurses. There was one specific example, I think she was in her 50s, talking about how she needed a routine hip operation. Eventually, someone donated the money so she could get it through the private sector. But unless you resolve these issues, which I know they're working on, unless you resolve these issues first, you're not getting anywhere. You've got to use the carrot and the stick. And so far, we're just seeing stick. We're just seeing people getting beaten by this stuff. It's crazy. And, you know, the economy shrank 0.01% in January. These cuts will make things work much worse for the economy because people on welfare, that money goes back into the economy. This is economically illiterate, politically illiterate, and socially illiterate on the three major policies the government has control over. This is complete stupidity on multiple levels here.
Yeah. Short-term thinking from my perspective, just to add into that. Go on, Graham. How did you take this? Were you surprised?
I thought some of the ideas in this green paper were good, right? So the one that I thought really stood out was the right to try. Mm-hmm. I know people who want to get back into work, but if they do, they'll have to run the gamut of going for their benefits, or should we say entitlements, again. And the whole system starts over again. It can take; they can go without any money coming in for a month or maybe more. And many people can't face that, so they won't go for a job. So I understand that. But where I am absolutely incandescent with rage is to do with Labour comms. So we've talked on our channel on Politics Social a lot about how bad Labour comms is. And we're talking about Labour selling itself and saying, oh, yeah, we've done a good thing. People need to know about it. But this is another level because there are people who are self-harming. There are people who are attempting to take themselves out before the announcement in Parliament because there were all these stories saying PIP was going to be frozen. This benefit's going to be taken away. You're going to have to prove that you're disabled again and again and again. And we didn't know because there was no clear messaging coming out of Labour. They were leaking stuff to the press, left, right and centre. This isn't a game. This is people's lives. And if they're off work because they're stressed, do you think you're making them less stressed? Do you think this is helping? And then once the announcement was made, another thing that's just driven me up the wall is she said, we've got to wait a week for the OBR to get back to us on the figures and who's actually going to be affected. So it's another week of not knowing what's happening. Yeah. What's causing all the shit with the American stock market at the moment? Uncertainty. What was the big kicker with Brexit for 3 years? It wasn't the fact that we were Brexiting, which was bad enough. It was the uncertainty. No one wanted to invest. No one wanted to set up a business here because they didn't know what the future was going to hold. Because the people in charge were like, oh, we're not going to tell you. Oh, we'll see. Well, let's go WTO, maybe. No, I'll change my mind. Oh, well, let's not do that. There were things. Do you remember this, Alex? When there was like signs on the motorway saying get ready for Brexit on October the 31st, and then it didn't happen?
Nope.
It's that same sort of level of just fucking around with people's lives in a way that politics just should not be doing. So that has driven me up the wall. I've written to my MP about it. I think if you're watching this, please write to your MP, especially if you've got a Labour MP, because most Labour MPs are all right. I mean, you've got your Wes Streetings, which are, you know, something else, but then you've got the vast majority of them, especially the backbenchers, the heart's in the right place, at least otherwise they'll be Tories. I think the way Labour have got about this has been just incredibly disheartening. To save £5 billion, mate. I mean, this is for the future, right? Because they're looking at it going, there's too many people out of work. And if it stays at this level or gets bigger, then it's going to be unsustainable because obviously the increasing elderly population. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, save money in the future. Don't take people's money away now. And one of the other things that's come out of this, they're talking about the point system. And you get a point for being able to dress your top half. You get a point for being able to dress your bottom half.
Yeah.
And you need 12 points. And you need like 4 in one category to get the pip that you've been getting all this time. And I'm like, what? Like, and one of the mad things about this is it's not always consistent. It's supposed to be on your worst day, on your absolute worst day. And on a worst day of someone who's got suffering from depression, they can't dress themselves. Because they're suffering from depression. But if you have someone turn up at the house and go, well, let's see you put your top on. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's really, really wrong-headed. Fine, sort stuff out for down the road. Help people get back into work. I have no problem with that at all. But cutting people's benefits or entitlements, as we should call them, it goes against everything Labour should stand for. And also, they're going to save £5 billion. Okay, I've got a way, right? To not just save £5 billion, right, but actually get 40 billion more for the Exchequer every year, £40 billion more. Do you know what that is?
I could think of a few things, but go on.
We all become drug dealers. No. We rejoin the EU. That's it. We rejoin the EU and legalize drugs.
Well, yeah. I mean, fucking hell, the tax revenue you could get out of that alone.
Alex, you sound like you'd be a customer, mate. Your eyes lighting up like that.
No, my drug is life.
I'm blunt enough sober.
That's. I think with the other thing is, I think the media campaign on this has been very interesting. So you had it leaked, I think, to the Times about 3 weeks ago about these cuts happening, and you had complete silence from ministers telling us to wait. And so I think that was done deliberately to prep people. So when they climbed down slightly, it was in the FT as well, how this was never a serious proposal. It was only done so then when they make the change to PIP, the criteria and things like that, and the changes to eligibility with other benefits, it would look like they made massive concessions. So they did all of that to prepare for this. So it does show you that they are more than willing to play dirty with this kind of thing and really scare the life out of people. Genuinely, on two different levels, you can say that because they don't care. Like, this is the stuff the Conservative Party would do. You know, George Osborne would never do anything this callous, though, from what I remember. I don't think he ever did anything in terms of the briefings. You know, he would do stuff like, we're going to do a beer tax. He would announce a beer tax in October to come in force in April. And then he'd be like, thanks to the hard work of the Conservative Party, we no longer have to do this tax. And he would take a victory lap over nothing. But this is infinitely worse. You know, the only way it could be better if Labour said, oh, do you know what, guys, this £5 billion, we're going to uprate capital gains to be in line with income tax, or we're going to go after certain tax evaders, like one of the owners of Manchester United who avoided a lot of money in tax when they moved to Monaco. I think it was around £4 billion. That's you know, you're £1 billion short of where you need to be at that point. But that's what I mean. Like, you know, they never went after the wealthy. They have so many options more than this. And this is really economically detrimental. You know, the fact, I think when she caved on getting rid of the non-dom tax exemption, that's when I was like, there's something really wrong here. There's something deeply wrong. And now they've gone after people on welfare. So it does show you where the party's priorities are and who they're listening to as well. Because they're not listening to people that work at Scope or people that work in charities and things like that. They're listening to the big capital. Yeah, capital, and that's no different tax, to the Conservative Party in that sense.
Gains tax, dividend tax.
Yeah.
Why don't they just increase that? I don't get this. You could, those two things alone, if you put them in line with income tax, not to say you should, but if you did, cover this easily.
Do you know who also had that idea? Rachel Reeves. She said it was an injustice that capital gains was less than income tax, and maybe the Chancellor should listen to
do you think it's the papers and the millionaires that are just fucking terrifying the upper echelons, or do you think this is like an ideological thing? And you know, this is an abomination. And I think I will also point
Alex,
this out.
This is no what one, always no, happens with Labour in power, mate.
No one is talking about young carers. No one.
Yeah.
No one's brought that up at all anywhere in the press, who will have to be looking after their parents. And if they fail on the PIP, there's less money in that household.
How much do they save? How much do they save the taxpayer?
£10 billion.
£10 billion a year because they only get £81.90.
Well, they should be being paid
for a 35-hour week. That they're works paid. Out. That works out at about £2.34 an hour.
Yep. Yep. No. That's... No support. Look after your grandparents.
Trying to look after my dad, who suffers from dementia. I applied for carer's allowance. It took them about 8 months to get back to me, and the answer was no. Do you know why? Because I had spent too much time out of the country before I came back to look after my dad. So I should have got my crystal balls out and, you know, seen what was going to happen in the future and spent more time in the UK, even though I was paying tax in the UK on any earnings that I made anywhere in the world. Pay my national insurance, fine. We'll take your money. But when you say, can I have a little bit back, please? They go, no.
Should have become a non-dom.
It was like 2 days or something, because you had to have like 90 days in the last 3 years or something in the UK. And it was like 2 days short.
So if you'd waited 2 more days before you applied?
Something like that. It was just maddening. And to make me wait for that long. But I want to push back on what Madge said, because what Gideon Osborne did, it was way worse. Like, austerity, I don't think we remember just how bad it was. Everything shut down. The short start centres shut down. In Liverpool, they got rid of the child bereavement service for, like, kids, counselling service for kids who had lost their parents. And what they did to the NHS was just beyond comprehension. Yeah. In 2010, the NHS was getting some of the best reviews in the world as a health system. And after 14 years of Tory government, we had people waiting 2 years for a hip operation.
We're talking specifically about this issue with the disability cuts. This is the system that George Osborne put in.
Yeah.
And they're cutting rid of a conservative system that inherently makes you worse than them, because you're getting rid of a system that those people who don't believe in a big state have implemented. So if you're going to improve the system, then fine, you're inherently better than them, but you're worse than them by definition, because you're getting rid of payments, you're getting rid of criteria that they set up. And they did it for the reason of pushing certain people out. The reason why I think they made PIP a benefit you can claim in work is so they can claim like they're helping, you know, universally. Like, it's not an out of work benefit. So in that by the thing that they are doing right now, they are worse than those two, because this is the system they set up. They're making it worse. If you see what I'm saying, and this specific thing, if you're talking broad austerity, you know, at least Labour putting some money back into the schools and things like that. You know, if you look at the system of schools, like there's a real a lot of teachers are leaving. I probably misspoke, to be honest. That's probably on me. But, you know, they're putting money back into schools. National minimum wage increases. Good. You know, there's some good things there. But, you know, when you're talking about the most vulnerable in society, and when you're talking about the language of the Conservatives, which is, you know, fiscal rules, balance, all of this stuff, that's the same language they use. That's the point. And it does make me sad that, again, disabled people are being punished for essentially the actions of investors and things like that really damaged this country. It's tragic, you know, like, you know, if you put the clip in here of, you know, because politicians always do this, they always talk about how they've had to deal with a disabled relative. You know, David Cameron talked about how, you know, he would never cut the NHS because his son relied on NHS care. What's his name? Ed Davey said, "Oh, my son's got a disability. You know, I would never do these kind of things." And then he did those things. And now you've got Keir Starmer talking about how his mum, you know, he understands disability because his mum was, she was disabled, I believe.
I've lived all my life with the impact of disability through my mum, who was very ill all of her life, and more recently my brother, who recently died of cancer. So I do understand the concerns. But I do think it's morally indefensible that a million young people are going essentially from education onto benefits. They're not in work, they're not in education, they're not in training.
And his brother had cancer. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if his brother claimed PIP. Would his brother have reached the criteria now if he was still alive?
Probably not.
When he had cancer? Probably not.
No, do we?
Yeah. So I'm saying, like, this is how dumb this is. Like, you can't say I'm an expert in these things and then be like, I'm going to do this thing that's going to hit specifically that would have hurt my family members. Fuck off.
But what we can do right now, because don't forget, this is only a green paper. It's not law yet. It's not, you know, they're not putting it before Parliament yet. Write to your MPs and talk about your experience and you know, if you're a carer or you're being cared for or you're on PIP or whatever it is, write to your MP, because that they can't ignore you if you are a constituent of theirs. They have to respond to you.
If you voted for Labour this time around, especially in a seat that they're going to need your help, make sure it's a point that I will not continue my support of you. I will get rid of any membership I have. I will vote for another party. Yeah. I make very clear that you will do this, because they will listen. If they're in a seat that's marginal and there's a chance they could lose their seat, that's it. That's their career done. You know, some of these people will be one and done MPs. 90 G's gone if they continue with these kind of policies. That's one of the things I understand.
Earlier, there's a couple of things in here which I like, which is, you know, the right to try, which I think is so important to try and get, you know, so people aren't scared of losing their benefits. The other one is the, you know, not having to reapply for benefits every 5 minutes when you've got a terminal disease, or, you know, you're completely disabled. And they think people's legs are going to grow back. Do you know what I mean? That for me was a ridiculous Tory policy. And anyone who's seen the film, like Daniel Blake, will, you know, appreciate just how difficult it is and how difficult the Tories made it. They'll set up an appointment and you'd have to be there on time. But because the Tories have ruined public transport, your bus arrives half an hour late and you're 5 minutes late for your appointment. And that's it. You get no money for a month. That's it. No money. So then you go to a payday loans company to borrow some money, which is very expensive if you're poor.
Yep.
It's very cheap to borrow money if you're rich.
Not so much. Because
you just use other people's money as collateral.
I thought the other thing that did catch my eye, and again, it is a green paper, but it looked quite interesting and positive, was I only caught a glance of it. I think they've appointed someone, or they intend to appoint someone as a commissioner to keep an eye on disability access and rights within workplaces, which I was actually like, okay, that was my one, and you know, the right to try for work.
Yeah.
I was like, I get it, but it feels like, you know what? It feels like they've put in a short term, what they think is a short term solution, which will be a long term and short term huge issue, which I don't think they've recognized. But the thing that keeps on coming up that they're not dealing with is the birth rate. The reason they seem to be focusing this direction is in part because they want to get people into work to make up the shortfall.
Yeah.
No one is addressing the issue that is clearly there and is getting worse of the low birth rate and the fact you've got 500,000 people a year leaving, which is that's 10 times as bad as the brain drain that took place in the 80s. Well, I am going to go back onto the disability thing, because it was a question I brought up last week. I feel there is still Victorian attitudes in this country towards the disabled.
Yes.
And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, because I think it's disgusting. It's clear discrimination, and it's just pushed into, like, I brought it up the other week. You go down most streets, you couldn't get someone in a wheelchair and push them along on them, because the streets are so fucking awful.
And there's cars parked all over them.
Go on, Graham.
I was going to say the cars are parked all over them. So my partner is profoundly deaf. She went deaf at the age of 4 due to measles. Please vaccinate your kids. And the thing that, you know, you're talking about the Victorian attitude, the one attitude that just absolutely boils my piss, and I blame Matt Lucas and David Walliams for this, whole idea that a lot of disabled people are just faking it. You know, they're not really wheelchair bound. They're not really deaf. They don't really deserve to park in that disabled spot. And the attitude of people towards non-visible disabilities in this country is absolutely disgusting. And it's got to stop, and it's got to be called out, because it's bad enough and expensive enough living with a disability. You've got a disability tax. Like, you want to do something. But do you want to take part in a meeting where you can actually hear what people are saying? Oh, well, you can get a pair of hearing aids from the NHS. They're not going to do anything. If you're profoundly deaf, they're shit. You know, it's just basically putting headphones in your ears and turn the volume up. That's all they do. If you want a pair of decent headphones, hearing aids that will actually work for the frequencies that you can't hear and dampen down the ones that you can, you're talking about $1,500 each.
You have to pay that private, you mean?
Yeah. Think of that on the NHS. And then you've got people who have got mobility issues. You know, if you want something other than just a wheelchair that you've actually got to wheel yourself around on, it's very difficult to get hold of one. You've got to go to charities. You got, you know, you can't get one from the government.
What,
you and all that, you know, you've got all that going on at the same time. And then on top of that, you get this discrimination every day of people going, oh, you must just be pretending to be deaf. And they go, are you registered deaf? And you go, who do you register with? But this idea that you get registered, there's a national deaf register that you write your name on, which would be a GDPR nightmare at the best of times, but there isn't. You know, it's and some people are great, you know, some people's attitude is fantastic, yeah. But others, we've had people say to our face, like, because Catherine is really good at reading lips, you know, oh, you're not really deaf.
They've and said that to you.
Yeah, they said it to Kat. They said, you're not really deaf. And she's like, what do you mean? She goes, well, you can understand what I'm saying. She's like, I'm reading your lips.
Do you think it's a so going back to it, do you think it's something left over from the Victorian period?
No, I'm
trying to figure out.
I don't think it's Victorian. I think it's just cynicism. I think it's the idea that obviously that's something that people do, isn't it? They just pretend to swing the lead. And we feel the same way about people who are on benefits. We go, oh, they probably can work. They're just pretending, especially all the mental health problems that are happening at the moment. We've got to change this attitude. We really do. But if people say they're in that, you know, they've got a problem, believe them, you know, because it's worth believing the 99.9% of people who do genuinely have a problem, instead of going, oh, well, you might be one of them who's just, you know, swinging the lead. It'd be like getting rid of the NHS because hypochondriacs exist. No,
Musk definitely alluded to that with their version of austerity. We'll come on to Trump and all that earlier. Richard Tice was alluding to that on Talk TV, the suggestion that people are just a bunch of grifters. And it's this very nuanced
thing. That's rich coming from him.
It's a very nuanced thing where they're like, yes, if you've got a real disability, like, what the fuck does that mean? If you've got a real disability, then you know, that's fine. But everyone else is a grifter and we need to catch them all. And you're just like, wow, you're such a rich, two-faced son of a bitch. Like, he comes off as if he's like caring for Britain. And that's part of the mantra that they had for Brexit. And then when it really came down to it, they just care about themselves. It was never about Britain. It was about what they could get out of it. And interestingly, I think that's an element that we'll touch on with Trump and what his actual aims are and why he's doing what he's doing. Madge, thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is the reason why West Street has gone after mental health a lot more, because you can't see it. And one of the things I realized talking to people at work is, and they're like, oh, I didn't know you had like issues or whatever. And so I'm not going to fucking tell you, you donut. Like, I work with you. Like, you're not my friend. Like, why would I go into detail about my life? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, I wish I knew. I'm like, I'm not. If someone says they've got an issue, just believe them. Just be like, okay. Yeah. Like, you know, they don't need to go into detail. Like, unless you're a medical professional or you have some sort of license, you can deal with shit. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So I think that's why he's gone after mental health a lot, because, again, you have to get a sign off from a doctor. And he's like, oh, are they overprescribing? It's like, well, where's your medical degree, pal? You might have worked for, I think, a pharmaceutical company. It doesn't mean you know much about what's going on with people. So it doesn't make sense. There's a massive lack of access to things like that. And I think, like I said, there's, you know, like you guys were talking about, visible versus invisible illnesses. That's what they're targeting now by the looks of things. And it's sad, isn't it? Because if you try and force someone into work who's having mental health issues, the moment that things get difficult in there, they could break, and it could be really, really damaging for them and people around them. So it's crazy, you know, the idea that you're leaving people on the scrap heap and things like that. It's like, no, it's like, you only do that when you give up on them. Like, you know, when you stop offering them medical care, that's when society gives up on people. And that's one of the things I found really frustrating about their language, because, you know, you have to fix the NHS first. You can't do much else without it. I think I've seen other commentators talk about how other countries are not suffering like we are because they still have a functioning healthcare system. You know, I remember during the pandemic, Germany were offering us bits of medical equipment in case we needed it because they had a massive surplus. We never did. Do you know what I mean? So because they broke the healthcare system and they, you know, they've been in charge for less than a year. I don't expect a miracle, but that's what you have to fix first before anything. And you have to make sure it's very clear and obvious. You need to fix it and push money into it in order to get everything else going. But instead they've gone the opposite route of saying, oh, you know, you guys that are physically ill and mentally ill, you need to get back to work so we can fix the NHS. Is like, they can't.
It was just something that we were talking about with the Victorian era and why I said it. And you both touched on it. It's the cynicism that exists as to the reason as to why you are where you are and what you're saying, and a complete lack of trust in what that person is saying. And the reason I bring up the Victorian era, and you brought it up earlier, was the workhouses. The reason those were developed in the way they were constructed and set up was to be so fucking awful you didn't want to go in there. But there was an option, and it was bloody horrible. And it was that idea, and this is why, I mean, this even ties in with that traditionalist Labour viewpoint that we talked about, where you should never apply for, or you should do everything within your power to avoid applying for benefits. That has been around for a while. That is definitely a traditionalist Labour viewpoint. That must come from the Victorian era. It's a total lack of empathy.
More money goes unclaimed in benefits than is lost in due to fraud. And like it's like being trans. If you are going to be someone who's on a grift, are you really going to pretend that you're looking after your elderly relative for £81.90 a week? Is that going to be your grift? Is that what? Because you're not going to have a great life with that. That's not going to cover your rent.
Nope.
Where are you going to live? Do you know what I mean? But that, you know, you're talking about the workhouses. Mm. This is why I think the Tories made sure so many people were on the streets. There was a concerted effort under the last Labour government from 97 to 2010 to try and help people get off from sleeping rough, get them back into sheltered accommodation and things like that. Shelter have actually found, they've done detailed research on this. It's cheaper to give people somewhere to live than to leave them on the streets. And you might think, how does that work? Well, because if they're in something like a flat complex or something, even with someone going to check with them, a care worker going to check on them, it's cheaper than leaving them on the streets where they will invariably get in trouble with the police. They'll invariably get in trouble with, or need an ambulance or have to go to the hospital X many times a year. And that costs the taxpayer way more than just giving them somewhere to live. And the reason why they leave them on the streets is to go, look at what happens if you step out of line. Look what happens if you try and fail. Look at what happens if you don't do what you're meant to do in life, what we want you to live your life the way we want you to live it. You'll be like these.
Yeah, the other thing on that point is that what they'll do is if they did put people into housing, they'd be like, why should he get a free flat? Yes. I have to pay for mine. Why did they get a free one?
But why should Richard Tice get a free flat?
Yeah, why should Thompson Bell get posh daddy? Why should MPs have their mortgages and stuff covered, bills covered?
Why should Dominic Cummings get a free fucking castle? He didn't work for that castle. He didn't besiege it and take it over. He wasn't climbing up a fucking siege tower with burning arrows to get in.
He did. That'd be quite entertaining to see.
He hasn't got the eyesight for it. He'll test his eyesight first.
But this is also interesting as well, because you've got this. It'll be Richard Tice. I've just mentioned how he was like cynical about it. At the same time, he claims he's some sort of Christian and we're a Christian country, which I just, you look at what we're doing and I'm
these
like,
people read the Bible. Jesus would hate Richard Tice. Richard Tice would have his tables thrown over and Jesus would be whipping him.
Yeah. It's like when they asked Dominic Raab, did he read the Good Friday Agreement? They asked Raab if he read the Good Friday Agreement and he was like, yeah, I have. And then she was like, what about this? He's like, well, I haven't read it.
Just ask you, since you had such a critical role as the Brexit Secretary, I presume that in fact you had read the Belfast Agreement. Please don't line up behind the Immigration Minister and tell us that you haven't read the agreement.
I haven't sit down and started at the beginning and gone through it, yeah. But of course at various points in the negotiations, when issues have been raised, it has been an important opportunity to delve in to the different aspects carefully.
So which aspects of the... So you haven't read the Belfast Agreement in its entirety?
I haven't sat down and gone from... I've used it as a reference tool to make sure that I understood and could satisfy and reassure myself that in relation to, A, the commitments that were made on both sides in relation to the joint report in December, which was the basis of what we were going to do on the backstop, that we're not impinging on anything required by the Belfast agreement. And
so, yeah, I've read the Bible. I haven't read it cover to cover. It's not my fault.
It's like 30 pages, the Good Friday Agreement, yes. Isn't it?
The sea was closed.
It's a short document.
I always think about this about the Bible. Imagine you met someone who's like a massive Harry Potter fan. And you said, have you read the books? No. Okay, but you've seen the films, haven't you? No.
I saw the bit.
Okay,
where he
dies. You go every week to a big building and worship Gandalf or whatever his name is. Yeah, sorry, Dumbledore. Okay.
I sometimes think that we're living in some sort of alternate universe. I mean, with all the stuff that Trump's been coming out with, It makes you wonder, like Max Rosebier has done two videos this week. Like he had Conor McGregor turn up this week.
It's great.
Max at the end.
From one rapist to another.
What's this? Yes.
From one rapist to another.
Yeah.
And absolutely people in Ireland dead are just like, what the hell? He's represent. Oh my God.
Yeah, that was pretty wild to be fair. I did see a lot of tweets about it. The MMA space is not happy with him being there either. So
are they not?
No, a lot of the fans don't really want him there. Well, he's fallen off, to be fair, given a lot of the stuff that he's been doing. But it is kind of nuts. He was like talking about Ireland and how dangerous the Dublin city centre is, and everyone's like, "Well, you punched an old dude, and you've got a credible rape allegation against you, so you might be the danger there, pal." So the longer you're in America, the safer the city centre is going to be.
What do you mean,
Dublin's dangerous?
He punched an old dude. Yeah. So is that a pub?
What happened?
You guys don't know about this. So no. He was trying to give out his whiskey, like, you know, his drink brand that he had,
yeah,
or has, and this old dude didn't want it, and then McGregor punched the guy in the face. Took the punch well, like he's still standing, or still sitting, but yeah, he punched him in the face. Yeah, I'll send you the video if I can find it.
How old are we talking? 80 or something?
Probably like 60s. You never know, people that drink a lot, like they age really badly. But I'd probably say 50s 60s. He ate a punch from him, and then yeah, so
and then Christ. Trump invited him down.
Epstein's busy mate, Donald Trump was, until he had him killed in prison, allegedly.
It is sad when your sport gets co-opted by a bunch of rich people who are complete scumbags, so that's fun. But yeah, that's basically what's happened. It's a big cultural thing. Like they always say keep politics out of sport, and then they're the ones who keep adding politics
into
sport.
And then along comes FIFA.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's yeah, with the Trump stuff, like, yeah. I think we mentioned Canada earlier, but I don't. That guy, man, he can give you about six videos a week just to do on the random stuff he's saying and doing. Like you could do a whole like news arc on him, and he still wouldn't be enough.
He said that Canada is the worst state that he deals with, like not China, not
North Korea,
not Russia, not Ukraine, Canada. And yeah, then he was just like, "How?" This is why, like when Max said it, it was like, "Yeah, like." What reality is this? I was even thinking to myself, was Conor McGregor meant to represent the Irish government? What the fuck was that? I think McGregor said he's going to run for president as well.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Fucking. I think it's more a ceremonial position, though, isn't it, in Ireland? It's not. I don't think it has too many powers.
Probably, yeah. Probably be like their figurehead, I guess. I'm not sure.
I think it's a figurehead position, yeah.
A president's in those sorts of countries. In a lot of European countries, they're mostly just ceremonial. Like, they don't really have a lot of power.
There is a president of Germany, and no one knows their name.
Ooh, what is
the president of India as well?
Yeah. Is Modi just the prime minister? And there's a president of India.
There's a president, but it's a head of state role. They just go around opening supermarkets and attending boat races.
Wow! And then,
which is good. Look, I want head of state, and even if you did get rid of King Sausage Fingers, I would like the head of state and the head of government to be two separate roles, because in America they're one role. And so if something horrible happens to America, like what's definitely going to happen in the next couple of years, because they're not making friends, let me just put it that way, America. There'll be a rally around the flag effect. So Donald Trump's approval rating will go through the roof,
yeah,
like it did for George W. Bush.
What if they went to war?
Nepo baby.
What if they went to war? Do you reckon?
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, there's a big terrorist attack or something horrific happens.
You think that's likely?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. He's pissing everyone off. He's leaving millions of Americans even with nothing left to live for. There's children dying in Sudan right now because he stopped them getting the antiretrovirals that they need to keep themselves alive, the HIV-positive children. And there's three of them, at least, who we know in Sudan have already died. Musk did that. Trump did that.
Just
richest man in the world, and he's not happy. Bloody
And then
hell.
He's complaining that it... I mean, where do you go? So Steve Bannon was talking about a third term, and when pushed and being told what he'd have to make a constitutional change, he was like,
I'm a firm believer that President Trump will run and win again in 2028. So I've already endorsed President Trump. A man like this comes along once every century. If we're lucky, we've got him now. He's on fire, and I'm a huge supporter. Want to see him again in 2028.
And obviously anybody who doesn't like what you say, but judges it as a function of a lack of intelligence, doesn't know anything about you. I don't make that mistake. You're a smart guy. You know he's term limited. How do you think he gets another term?
We're working on it. I think we'll have a couple of alternatives. Let's say that.
we're figuring a way around that. That's wild. Then you've got Musk, and you've just said what he did, along with everything else. He was caught on camera saying he didn't understand why people were so angry at him and Tesla. They must have a mental health issue.
Tesla is a peaceful company. We've never done anything harmful. I've never done anything awful. I've only done productive things. So I think we just have a deranged... there's some kind of mental illness thing going on here, because this doesn't make any sense.
Why, there are no children here at the 4-H Club either. Am I so out of touch? No, it's the children who are wrong.
And you're going, people haven't done this to someone. Like, I'm unaware, I'm not aware of even Henry Ford having stuff like this done with Ford factory, Ford cars, even though he did a lot of controversial stuff.
And he was a massive Nazi.
And a massive Nazi, anti-Semite. I've not heard of people attacking his factories, cars, and everything else during that same period.
I think but with Musk this stuff, it's a lot more.
I'll just finish off. Yeah. I'll just say that Musk is so arrogant. This is like classic stuff that you hear in history. It's not me who's the problem. It's the people. And you're going, dude, like, if they're torching your cars in your sale rooms and they're putting up Nazi swastikas, maybe you should have a rethink about doing Zeke Heils in fucking public. Maybe you should have a rethink in cutting people's benefits. Maybe you should have a rethink in cutting people's jobs. Go on, Graham.
Yeah. When Musk was being interviewed by Joe Rogan, he said that the biggest problem was that empathy. Empathy was the biggest problem in Western culture and Western society. Empathy.
Weakness of Western civilization is empathy.
I mean, it's really come as quite a shock to me that there is this level of really hatred and violence from the left. I always thought the left, or the, you know, Democrats were supposed to be the party of empathy, the party of caring.
And then this week, he's been saying, oh, where's the empathy? Why are people burning down my garages? Oh, where's the empathy? Put those two clips together if you can. So it was what he said on Joe Rogan, and then what he wrote on his disgusting Nazi 4chan network. What's it called these days? Shitter.
How did Rogan sit there so straight fucking faced and say it wasn't a Zeke Hart? And yet this guy, and I never heard Rogan ask him once about why he endorsed the AfD, which no one will go near in the European Parliament.
Rogan probably doesn't know him.
Nazis.
Rogan probably doesn't know him. That's probably why. And with the car burning stuff, I think it's a lot more popular to, like, if you hate a company, to burn their stuff. Like, they did that with Nike gear when Nike went woke, apparently. So I think that stuff's a lot more popular now. Like, before, I think you just kind of divest from the company, or, you know, just quietly boycott them. But now I think that culture is a lot more prevalent. I think the right winger started it, really, by just burning all their clothes and stuff. And then they boycotted, I think it was one of the beer companies, might have been Coors or something like that. I can't remember which one it was. And they bought a different one.
I think it was Bud.
Oh, Bud. And they bought another beer
campaign on inclusivity.
And then they bought a beer that was also owned by the same company that owns Bud. So very smart. But if you look at the Tesla share price as well, it's dropping massively because investors are losing faith in him. So I think that's the thing he's panicking more about. And some of those Cybertrucks go on fire by themselves. So, you know, I think Elon's got bigger problems than people like setting them on fire. But I think that's where it's come from. Like, it's a lot more clout chasey, but also a lot more kind of accepted that people will put things on fire if they don't like a specific company. And Elon's learning that the hard way now. Just got to hope no one sets fire to that stupid tunnel he's got.
Fucking hell, yeah, that is, he would have a major fucking problem. It's the Boring Company, isn't it, in LA?
Won't be a boring news story if anything happens to that, I'll be honest, but it's a concern.
Someone, yeah, they could set it on fire, couldn't they? They take a car down there and just blow it up. That's the end of that fucking tunnel.
In theory, hypothetically speaking.
I don't think you can take your own car down there. I think the cars are already there and they just drive slowly through the tunnel.
I've seen the clip. You drive in and then it lowers you down and then it sticks you all the way across LA. I mean, it's an interesting idea.
We had a locomotive that could do such a thing, you know, a vehicle.
Fit loads of people into a carriage.
Yeah.
And could travel even vehicles faster.
And goes in a straight line as well, generally.
Yeah.
Only such a device was invented.
They're never going to invest in public. I mean, one of the guys that got in from Project 2025 is in charge of transport. So, and like, I think there were four of the positions that he pulled in for the Project 25 people. And then also, coincident, I think one of them which I found out today, which was just like, wow. He has fired in transport and I think those other five departments, anyone who has a responsibility for investigating fraud.
Yeah.
And that includes a department that he set up where you can openly donate, I think, to the Republican Party itself, where you get a donation and that's it. No, there's now no investigation as to what you're given in return or if you are given anything in return.
I mean, this is also the same guy who fired lots of people looking after avian flu, I think nuclear scientists as well. Like, this guy's a complete mug. So, and he's tried to, you know, rehire them effectively with pay. So, you know, this guy, like, the idea he was smart, I think, ended probably about 10 years ago, that he was some sort of genius. It really died when he bought Twitter and ruined my favorite website. So, yeah, got no sympathy for the guy.
Tesla have recalled 46,000 Cybertrucks on Thursday this week, as a panel, a glued-on panel, could fall off at speed, creating a road hazard. So they've had to recall them all.
And let's be honest, that's just
glue, I guess.
That car's ugly as hell as well, so...
If only there was some way of attaching metal to some other bit of metal that didn't involve glue. That had been created at some point, I don't know, in the fucking Iron Age.
Did you see the director for Tesla came out, and one of the directors for Tesla came out and said he needs to resign from Tesla?
Was it a director or an investor?
I think it was a director. I think it was a bit. He was obviously an investor, but he was also a director.
Oh, okay.
They must have whacked in a fair sum of cash and said, "I'll give you this, but you need to give me a position as director as well."
He needs. I mean, if he wants Tesla to keep going, he's going to have to get out. But I mean, look. I try not to let myself get too excited about the fact that if Tesla's stock falls to a certain point, Elon Musk will be bankrupt. He'll never be bankrupt. He's got the American government in his pocket, effectively. Yeah. He's got access to all those social security checks in America.
Yeah.
He'll just steal it. Someone put a bet on Bitcoin just a couple of hours before Trump said, oh, we're going to have a Federal Reserve of Bitcoin. And that someone made $100 million that in an afternoon.
There's a shit ton of insider trading going on, even with the Trump coin and the Melania coin as well. Like, there's so much insider trading going on right now. It's a lot worse than it was. And it's really bad, like with Pelosi and stuff like that as well. So this is just another level of it in terms of that kind of thing. It's, I did see a lot of tweets when Biden was debating Trump about how America's in its Soviet Union phase. And I guess this is the post-Soviet Union phase where everything is just open to corruption and purchase. Yeah. Like when, Abramovich just buying up oil and stuff on the cheap. You know, you've got people buying up essentially government departments on the cheap. Like, this is it. I think they're done. I think in about 5-10 years' time, they're done.
What, the United States?
Yeah, they'll still exist as a unit, but I think you're going to see a lot more kind of federal... kind of states threatening to go in their own direction. You're going to see a lot more poverty there, and you're going to see a very broken country, because the United States is the richest country in the world, but it's also a country full of lots of poor people, lots and lots of poor people.
Biggest inequality in the world as well. Yeah.
It's like the UK. You know, there are lots of rich people who live here, and a lot of poor people who live here, and there's one that outnumbers the other. You know, there was a study from Princeton, I think it's about a decade old now, where it said the US is an oligarchy. You know, if anything, that's gotten worse now. When you saw Trump at his inauguration, hanging out with Zuckerberg, you know, Dana White, Elon, those guys, the billionaire tech bros. Oh yeah, what's his name? The Amazon guy, Bezos. Like, that's it. You're not a government. You're a company. Like, your country's been taken over by corporations fully, and that's it. That's all they care about.
Yeah. Did you see? Agreed. Or I know it only came out today, but have you had a look at Gary Stevenson versus Daniel Priestley on Diary of a CEO yet? Daniel Priestley is like a libertarian economic theorist. Oh, that's what he believes in. I don't think he's a theorist. I know he's in several big companies. I think he's written 5 books. But literally within the first 5 to 10 minutes of that show started, he turned around and said, oh, if you put in heavy regulation, you can't have a strong economy. And I was like, Norway? Finland? What the fuck are you talking about?
The happiest country on earth? Finland, number one? Yeah. All five top Nordic Scandinavian countries.
And then tried to defend the 2008 crash, suggesting that the government interference afterwards was the major problem, even though it was completely deregulated market. Yeah.
They're gearing up for the biggest crash you've ever seen. Madge is right. America is never going to have a free and fair election again. The next election that it has, it's not going to be an election, or it's not going to be America.
I've got to admit, it was pretty fucking disturbing seeing the way Steve Bannon answered that question. and you're like, I mean, what I'm hoping is they'll somehow come up with some fucking crazy loophole that allows Trump to rerun. And I'm going, I really hope he does, because you'll see Obama then rerun and he'll wipe the floor with him. I mean,
do you think so? Maybe, with the Democrats right. At the moment, they're on 27% approval now. The Democrats, Trump's on 48%.
Yeah. I'm not bothered by that because they've lost. They're in turmoil. Harris hasn't stepped into the breach. I wonder if there's an element of just like, you know what? Let's just take a bit of a break. Let them fucking screw it up, which they are doing spectacularly.
It's hardly making a dent in the approval ratings for Trump, though.
I think
let's say they come out and they criticize.
Yes.
They can't
mobilize, get people out in the streets.
They can protest.
Yeah.
And maybe they can do something statewide, countywide. But federally, he's got a complete mandate. He's got the Senate, he's got the House, he's got the presidency, and he's got the Supreme Court.
Yes.
There is very the Supreme Court, there were federal court judges this week who were criticizing him, and the response from the Trump administration is to take those judges to court and
impeach them.
Going,
yeah.
So he's ignoring the House, and the House is starting to get really angry about this. There is stuff coming out that's just not being broadcast, where you've got Republicans going, what are you doing? We need to have a voice. It's not a presidential system. It's a three branch system that's meant to equal out power. But essentially, what do you do when you've got, I mean, don't get me wrong. You can go on TV, you can complain, you can moan, but you can't legislate.
Doesn't matter. People power, get the people on the streets. Get the people out, get people angry, get them riled up, make impassioned speeches, get them, you know, kicking down the doors of Republican lawmakers. Look, there are things that they could be doing. At the minute, they seem to be doing nothing. They are asleep at the wheel. And look, you know, there's a few of us who thought that Brexit would turn out terrible and the price of a pint of beer would double overnight as a result, which it has done, and it would plunge even more people into poverty, which it has done. That would be enough. That would show everyone that Brexit was a terrible idea and we'll be back in 7 months' time. That didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
Even though things are way shitter now than they were 15 years ago, people just put up with it. So I don't think there's going to be some road to Damascus moment when, you know, the scales fall from the eyes of these Trump voters and they
you
go,
say
oh, yeah,
that,
man.
But he got his ass kicked in the last... When he was up against Biden, he got his ass kicked. He didn't win by that much. He won in three. Kamala Harris lost by 200,000 votes in three states. If it had gone the other way with 200,000 votes in each of those states, she'd be president.
Yep.
When you look at it like that, that's a narrow margin. And it's shit because you're going, she only had 3 months to put a campaign together.
He still won the popular vote, Alex. He's the first president, Republican president, to win the popular vote for an age.
Wow.
No, I mean,
but
yeah,
his numbers
fair enough,
didn't go up. I don't think his numbers went up from when he won the first election. They were exactly the same, and the population's increased.
Yep. People didn't vote for the Dems.
No,
their base didn't come out.
That was a vote for the status quo. In the same way that voting to remain in the EU was a vote for the status quo, and that was used against us.
Yeah, I'll give you something. So since 2016, by what percentage, on average, in England and Wales, do you think the rent's gone up by? What
rent?
Rent between 2016 and now?
79%.
I think 79, Madge?
Say again, sorry?
Rent. How much has it gone up by since Brexit as a percentage?
Probably about, 60% maybe.
Not bad, both of you. 52. Food, how much has it increased by? As
food's gone up by at least 50%.
You want 50, Madge?
Go 70.
25%.
Okay, that's not too bad.
Depends on the food.
Then some foods have gone up more than others.
Yeah, like olive oil, imported foods.
There's hardly any basics anymore. You know, when you used to be able to get like a 7p can of beans and stuff, you can't do that anymore. Those ranges don't exist.
It's all been rebranded. Like Tesco Valley's rebranded as like their own like mini brands and stuff like that. So you can't, there's not much going.
House prices, how much have they increased by since Brexit as a percentage? So we had rent, we've had food.
Are we saying 2016 Brexit or are we saying 2021
Brexit?
Okay. House prices.
Number go up 25%.
I'll go 40%.
26.
That was 1%
out.
It's marginal. For someone who doesn't own a house.
52, 25, 26. In that same period, how much have wages gone up on average in England, Wales?
Fuck all.
Go 10, 10%.
Great.
How much have wages gone up?
Yeah.
2%.
10.
Madge. 10.
Bah, let's go. Oh, Madge. Let's go, fam. That's why I'm the under target. So I'm undefeated in the quiz. It's not because someone DNF'd today. That's why I'm undefeated. That's the champ.
Can I ask Wild?
Alex,
everything is meant to have gone down.
Yeah.
Since Brexit, and everything's gone up, and then everyone's saying, "Oh, our wages have gone up." They fucking haven't. And again, it's as you said. It's in some areas it'll gone up, other areas it'll stay stagnant. Yeah. But overall, it's 10%. I was just.
Do you have the figures for how much a pint of lager's gone up?
No.
That'd be an interesting one.
Oh, do you not know? I thought you were about to tell me.
No, I think it's doubled. I honestly think it's doubled. I think it was about £3 in 2016, and now it's about £6 to get even a cheap pint of lager in a northern pub.
Six, that's London rates.
Yeah, I know.
It used to be London rates.
Yeah, I know. London's even more than that now.
Tenner. You could easily get a pint for a tenner. Let's go. I'll tell you what, Wetherspoons, as much as I hate the guy in the pub, still get a pint for about £2.50, £3 in London. If you like a pint of ale. I don't mind a pint of ale every so often. On that cheerful note, thanks to my wonderful guests. Thanks for that lovely chat. I hope that was a bit more therapeutic. It wasn't so much fun this week. Once again, hail to the lamp. Thank you all.
See you guys.
Bye.
Tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Yes. Twilight Zone. You're in a horrible scenario and you've only got two choices. You must pick one.
Through the scary door.
You can take Ryanair on your travels, permanently stuck in an airplane, but you have to do it with Katie Hopkins.
Okay.
Your other alternative, and you get a bit of extra legroom for this one, is EasyJet.
Yeah.
But you're sat with Nigel Farage. Who do you pick?
If you... If you cause someone like an injury on over international waters, is that a crime?
I don't think it is.
I think on a boat, yes. On a plane, I think slightly different, isn't it? I guess it depends if it's privately chartered.
It's only an issue when you land, because they're the only ones who can arrest you. So,
okay, can they arrest you if you eject them out of the plane, though, because it was over international waters?
I'm sure they can.
Security can have to grab you. So, if you avoid security, you're fine.
So you want me to be on one budget airline with Katie Hopkins or a different budget airline with Nigel Farage? Death, please. Is that an option?
No.
He didn't say you can't jump out of the plane. Stops.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm Katie Hopkins, and then I'll just jump out at 40,000 feet. Thank you very much. I'll go join the gremlin on the wing.
There was no rule against it.
Madge. Permanently stuck so on YouTube.
Oh no.
And you can only watch two things on YouTube.
Please be InfoWars with Alex Jones.
You've got GB News, Morgan Farage.
Right.
Or Boris's greatest speeches.
Going GB News Farage. Good. Yeah. You know, at least I wouldn't have to hear Boris Johnson just talk nonsense all day. Have you heard one of his speeches? His speeches are crazy.
Peppa Pig.
Something about the Harry Potter games, and I'm just like, what, I'm so lost in the speech. So we're going Morgan Farage. You know, I'll be radicalized, but it'll be worth it. Well, I guess cheap shoes for peasants. Yes, cheap food.
Cheap shoes for peasants.
Wait. You were laughing then. You're not laughing now. So I can master that one as well. That's what Farage is going to say when he becomes Prime Minister of this country, because Labour are washed.
You all laughed at me. I don't think he'll last. I think
loathing's
just the beginning.
It might be the greatest moment in political history when he takes the premiership and says, you were laughing then, you weren't laughing now.
Did you?
That's what he said in the European Parliament when Brexit got through the line. I was like, as much as I love the delivery and the everything behind it, you're still a fucking scumbag. If this was a movie scene, it'd be top 10 movie scenes all time. The villain wins. But no, not in real life, pal.
Did you see the three reporters ask him about Rupert Lowe? He just went, boring, yawn, no more.
Oh, he does that, to be fair. He does that. He's like a child. It's like, boring. No one cares.
No one cares. Yawn. Bye.